Our PowerPoint system still needs fixed, but thanks to some work by Jeff Martin, we are hanging on by a thread. So I don't promise what's going to happen, but we will hopefully be able to look at all the slides. Normally, I would not review quickly information from a previous lesson, but because of how things went this morning, let's do that quickly. Genesis, the beginning of time. James Usher, the fellow I mentioned to you, he thought that the world was created on October 23rd, 4004 BC. Bible indicates that we have a young earth versus an old earth. We know where the people first started. That would be in the Persian Gulf area. Adam and Eve were their names. They had some children, Cain and Abel initially. The oldest brother, of course, was a murderer. Some people think that Eve ate the apple. There is no indication that it was an apple. People sometimes ask where Cain got his wife. We answered that question. We noted how that was not an issue because of how genetics were then compared to how they are now. People live for hundreds of years. Later, under the Mosaic Law, Leviticus chapter 18, verses 6 through 18, banned the close marriages, just as we have bans today. We talked about the mighty men from Genesis chapter 6. Likely they were Seth's relatives, going back into Genesis chapter 4, Genesis chapter 5. And then because of those unrighteous marriages, those unrighteous alliances, sin begins to expand. The flood is finally promised, Genesis chapter 6. And as we think about the flood, we've got a lot of fossil evidence in some places that is very difficult, if not impossible, to explain unless there was a global flood. A number of cultures talk about a global flood. We talked about the birds that were sent out, the rainbow promise that God made, how after that there was one language, Genesis chapter 11 and verse 1. There was the expansion of the population. Men wanted to stay in various places. God changed the language. Abraham is then introduced in Genesis chapter 12, and we have information about Lot, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the miracle baby, Isaac, and Abraham's great faith. He was willing to sacrifice Isaac, Abraham's great wealth. He has a second marriage to Keturah. Isaac, of course, is the son of promise. Then you have the marriage of Isaac and Rebekah. Jacob and Esau are forthcoming. And you have Jacob wedding two sisters, Leah, Rachel. And each of those ladies had a handmaid, a helper, female helper. 12 sons come from that. Joseph's coat of many colors. Joseph finally ends up in Egypt. Jacob and his family are finally down there in Egypt. There's another miracle child. That, of course, is Moses, and that's where we begin tonight. Moses. Moses, of course, had a brother. If you can get that information in your minds, you're prepared for what I would refer to as the second half of the Old Testament. As you think about Moses, you now have God's people. There's a nation. All that Genesis history that brings us up to the point in time where now we have a nation of people, Israel. It is this nation of people that is in Egyptian bondage. They've been in Egypt for about 400 years. Moses is the one who was raised up to help lead God's people out of captivity. But Moses, there's also a veiled hint there, that at a future time there was going to be a greater captivity or bondage. And someone who was similar to Moses was going to come and also be a deliverer. Moses, of course, delivered the people from physical bondage or slavery. Jesus delivers people from the bondage of sin. Moses, as you look at his life, do you remember how he walked on the water? Or part of the water, walked through the water, we should say. And then when you think about Jesus many years later, what do you find? Jesus walked on the water. Not surprising. We think about Moses. He was the one who spent, as you look at the wilderness, 40 years out there in the wilderness with the people. Did Jesus spend some time in the wilderness? Yes. 40 days, not 40 years like Moses. Moses goes up in the mountain. Information is received from God. We have Jesus giving the Sermon on the Mountain, Luke chapter 6, Matthew chapter 5, 6 and 7. You find that through Moses a covenant was given, and through Jesus a covenant has been given. Moses was the one who helped safely deliver people from Egyptian bondage, led Israel in the wilderness. And as Israel was in the wilderness, they were in a very hostile land, brutal land, and that fierceness of the land. In fact, the Bible, the Old Testament, actually talks about how hostile the land was. That experience should have increased their faith. But as you begin to look at the scriptures, you find that for most of them, it didn't. Because of the experiences that they had in the wilderness, they began to whine and groan and mumble and complain. Well, God got sick of that. And God was so dissatisfied with the people because of all the things that we've looked at historically, that great power of God. Because the people began to complain and grumble so much, God said, most of you are not going to enter into the promised land. If you are at least 20 years old and up, God said, you're going to die in the wilderness. Your bodies are going to be out here in the wilderness. That's where you're going to leave this life. As we think about that part of the Old Testament, it is possible to be a Christian or certainly a non-Christian. and go through life and be just like the Israelites. We don't like this. We don't like that. We don't like him. We don't like her and so forth. Few things ever seem to be good or right. When you look at Old Testament history, there are a number of great examples, and here is one. Don't be like the Israelites. As you think about Israel, they are out there in the wilderness, and the time finally comes where all the older generations have died off. And now it's time to go into the land. As you start looking at this, you find that there were scouts. As we note on the slide, there were 12 scouts that were sent into the land. That information is in the book of Numbers, Numbers chapter 13. And as you look at these men, they go into the land. They begin to survey all the various things that are there. They find that it is a very rich, it is a very wonderful land. They're very impressed. While the land was great, it offered many good things as far as houses and cities and crops. The spies, as they looked at the land, they said they have walled cities. And the people there, they're not sissies. These people are fierce people. After they amass or accumulate all this information, they decide to go back. It's time to go back and give a report, and they do give a report. You may recall from the Bible, the Old Testament, how 10 of the spies came back and said, it is a rich land, it is a wonderful place, but we can't take it. There's some mean guys over there. There's some tough people over there. And they have walled cities. But there were two spies who disagreed. Caleb and Joshua said, we can take the land. God will help us. But those 10 faithless men were able to convince the people of Israel that going into Canaan was a very bad idea. What those 10 people did, sometimes it doesn't take a lot of people to create some big problems. What those 10 people did was sufficient to cause the nation of Israel to rebel. If you were to read through the book of Exodus, Exodus chapter 14 and verse 4, I don't think that's the right passage, but the Old Testament tells us that they suggested that they get a new leader and return to Egypt. Let's go back and return to captivity. God said that fate was bad. And that's where we get back to Numbers chapter 14 and verse 29. God said, you're going to die in the wilderness if you're 20 years of age or older. Now, as God's people were out there in the wilderness, they were not idle. You begin to find, as you read through the book of Exodus, that God had his people involved with worship. It is in the book of Exodus that we have some information about a tabernacle. Somebody says, well, what's a tabernacle? A tabernacle is a portable place. In this case, it was a portable place for worship, portable sanctuary. In the New Testament, we find that where we worship doesn't matter. We could be here, we could be under a tree. Location simply has no bearing on worship. But for the Hebrews, for the nation that God brought out of captivity, there was this place for a period of time, and that was the tabernacle. As you go back and you look at the tabernacle, and hopefully at some point on Sunday evenings, we'll continue to look at that subject, doing a more detailed study of it, you begin to find that it was a place where the people were involved with sacrifice. A bunch of sacrifices were involved. You read about, for example, there was a grain sacrifice and all kinds of offerings that were made there. You also find, as you think about the tabernacle, that there was the holy place as well as the most holy place. Most are familiar with the Ark of the Covenant, perhaps because of the movie, maybe because of the Bible. That Ark of the Covenant, it contained some things. There were the commandments that Moses had given. They were in there. You have Aaron's rod that budded. There was also a jar of manna. Today, as you look at people, you think about people, there's still some information about the Ark of the Covenant, but we don't know what happened to the Ark. Maybe it's buried somewhere. Maybe God decided to do something with it. After the destruction of Jerusalem in 586 BC, the fate of the Ark is not discussed. About 2,500 years ago, the information about the Ark just faded away. I don't know what happened to it. I guess it possibly could turn up some at some point, but that doesn't seem likely. As you think about the Jews and this nation that's out there in the wilderness, as I mentioned, they're making a lot of offerings. And as I mentioned last week, as we were talking about briefly the book of Leviticus, that book is almost a manual for holiness. God told the people all the information about the priests and so forth. If you want to offer a burnt offering, a grain offering, a sin offering, whatever it is, God says, I'm giving you all these instructions so you will know how to worship correctly. He's done that with the New Testament as well. He says, if you worship me, here's how you need to do it. So as we start thinking about this, I'm a slide behind, excuse me. As we start thinking about this, we've got a lot of other pieces of information that help us put the Old Testament together. For example, there is the story about the talking donkey. And you've got some information in the Old Testament about Rahab. And then as you look at the Bible, you read about a very significant event concerning the period of time that was about 3,000 years ago. Moses is ready to die. He's old. And it's time for someone to replace him. That, of course, was going to be Joshua. There was an invasion, an important invasion about 3,000 years ago. If you can imagine the land of Israel, and you can imagine the Jordan River in the land of Israel, as you go back and you start reading the Old Testament, you begin to find that on the west side of the Jordan River, there were six cities that were attacked and six cities that were overcome. The time had arrived for Israel to leave the wilderness and begin going into the land of Canaan. As you think about that period, the book of Joshua has information about that. Jericho is listed on our slide, was certainly overcome. You may remember from that story how the soldiers of Israel were commanded by God to command it to take Jericho in a very special way. God said to his people, I want you to march around the city of Jericho. And I want you to do that for 6 days. There were soldiers who were marching, and you have seven priests in front of the ark. And those seven priests were carrying ram's horns. I imagine the people of Jericho, thinking about this from the perspective of people being people, I imagine the people of Jericho, they looked outside and said, hey, guess who's here today? Look at those guys. They got their horns. What clowns. What do they think they're going to do with us? They think they're going to attack us? Is their God going to help them? There must have been a lot of jokes that people were making. Today, that still happens. Individuals will look at those who are involved with spiritual matters and still sometimes mock them or make fun of them. Then day seven comes. Again, there's marching around Jericho, but this time the marching around Jericho is sevenfold, seven times. And then the priests, they get to the point where they blow the horns. And once again, I can imagine the people inside that walled city. They were thinking, there was day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six. When are these people going to give up? They're not doing anything. Well, they began to see what God was going to do on day seven. On the seventh pass, the walls came down. God told his people to shout, and just as he had promised, the city fell. God told his people, after Jericho was overthrown, what to do with the wealth, the spoil, the goods. But as we look at Bible history, there was a man who decided that he didn't want to listen. There was a fellow by the name of Achan. More disobedience in the land of Israel. He decided that there were some things that he just had to have. He coveted those items. He took those items. And it is from that account that a lot of sermons have been preached about sin in the camp. God gave some specific instructions, but this fella did not want to listen. He had his own way, his own ideas, and that's what he did. Just like some people today when it comes to their ideas. After Israel enters into Canaan, they become settled as a nation there. This cycle of we're with God and, well, we're not going to be with God, we're going to obey, we're not going to obey, it goes back and forth. It's almost like a yo-yo, or it's almost like a seesaw. And we see it again and again. I would compare what happened with Israel in the land of Canaan to someone who has an addiction. Maybe you know of someone who has struggled with an addiction. For one person, it might be that it's drinking or smoking, pornography, gambling. You can just go down the list and say that this is something that the person struggles with. And as the person finally recognizes that they have this addiction, they have been battling it for a while, and they finally think, I've got to stop. This is ruining my life. We'll just take gambling, for example. The person says, I have, you know, not been able to pay my bills. I've lost my house. I've lost my car. I've lost my wife. I've got to stop my gambling addiction. And for a month or 6 months or maybe a year, the addiction stops. But as you look at people who are truly addicted, what happens sometimes? After a period of time, they do so well, and then one day, I got to go back to the casino once more. I've got to buy another lottery ticket. Oh, there's this fight or there is this game coming up, and I just have to bet on that. And what happens? They open the door to the addiction, and back they go. You may have known someone who decided to diet. I've got to lose weight. Well, okay. And they go on a diet, and they do well for 6 months. But what happens after 6 months? They're in the grocery store, and they see that sweet treat. I've got to have one of those. And they break the diet that day. But it's not just that day. They open the door, and that diet is thrown out the window. That's what Israel did. They come along, they do well for a period of time, but then the old ways, especially the ways of the pagan gods, they become attracted to those. And they're just like a lightning bug to, or mosquito to a light. They just can't leave the stuff alone. And they go back into sin. Because they went back into sin, God at a certain point in time said, you've got to be punished. And I'm going to send you into captivity, not for a long period of time, sometimes around 20 years. And as the people were back in bondage, they didn't like that either. So they cried out to God, "We don't like what's happening with us." So God says, "I'm going to send you a judge." That's why you read about judges or military deliverers in the book of Joshua. Well, you wonder why God's people would have made such a dumb choice. If they had seen all the things that God had done with Israel, if they knew about that pre-Israel history with all the things in the book of Genesis, why would they possibly do that? Why would they ever worship a stick or a rock or some large stone? The answer to the question is simply this. Habits can be hard to break. The more ingrained a habit is, the older that we get, the more difficult it can be to break a habit. Another answer is that sin can be awfully attractive, and it was for the Israelites. Well, as shown on the slide, not all of Israel's judges were men. We, for example, read about a woman named Deborah. Some have pointed out, in fact, Teresa and I, some years back, had a neighbor who was familiar with Deborah. The congregation that she was attending had a woman preacher. We asked her about that. And she said, "Well, the woman preacher at our congregation is fine because don't you know that in the Old Testament, Deborah was a judge?" I said, "Yeah, I think I've read that story a time or two." "But is that your justification for having a female preacher?" She said, "Well, it makes sense to me." Deborah was not a judge to somehow say, in the future, we're going to have a New Testament and it's okay to have women preachers. Deborah was a judge. God allowed her to serve in this capacity because men were not willing to be men. If Deborah proves anything, if there's any application at all with Deborah and her life, at least one of the first points of application would be this. God expects men to be men. If and when men are not men, that is a serious issue. That's a problem in our day and time. People don't want men or males to be men or males. I reposted an article on the web last Thursday. The article talked about how some schools have a day where it is boys wear a dress day. Can you believe it? That's what's taking place in some of our school systems right now. You're a boy, you wear a dress, and that's going to help you blend in better with girls. For a long time, and there are various reasons for this, not all of them bad, but sometimes a school will say every child has to wear the same clothing. There can be some bad reasons for that. We've seen cases where people have come along and said, if you're a boy, we don't want you to play with quote-unquote boy toys. Put away the truck, put away the G.I. Joes, and play with the doll. We've seen cases with scouts where the same thing happens. The Boy Scouts now include the girls, and they've renamed it Scouts. When you don't allow males to be males or men to be men, there are some very bad consequences. You see that reflected or taught in the book of Judges. The Judges also offer some good insights in some other ways. For example, it is here that we read about a man named Gideon. And along with Gideon, there is this fellow by the name of Jephthah. Now, Jephthah is not a guy that we talk about very often, but if you go back and you look at how he came into the world, he was the son of a prostitute. I don't think I have ever met anybody who told me I am the son of a harlot. Were that the case, though, I think that there would be some people who would not be proud of that fact. This is how I came into the world. This was my mom's occupation as she got pregnant. But as you look at Jephthah, do you know something about him? Do you know that he appears in the New Testament? Do you know that he not only appears in the New Testament, he appears in the book of Hebrews? Somebody says, well, where would he appear in the book of Hebrews? It's in Hebrews chapter 11. Over there in Hebrews chapter 11, that is that chapter which is that great hall of faith. Somebody comes along and says, well, you don't know all the disadvantages I had. No, I don't. You don't know how the other people in my school, my neighborhood, my whatever, my state, I came from a poor state, and everybody from there doesn't do well. I had these humble, these rotten beginnings, and my life got off to a poor start. That may be absolutely true. It doesn't have to stay that way, though, does it? Jephthah, terrible beginning, but became a military deliverer for God's people. And thousands of years later, maybe not quite that far, but many years later, we begin to find that he was recognized for his faith. Then as you look through the book of Judges, you have somebody else. Another well-known character, this, of course, was Samson, and through his life, we learn some things about the Philistines. Then you have that book that is a short book, the book of Ruth. That, of course, has some information about Ruth, Boaz, and some other characters. Ruth, of course, was someone who had lived during the time of the Judges. Ruth, of course, was not a Jew. She was a Gentile. And that's important because as you start thinking about history, sometimes people say, well, what about non-Jews? Were there any non-Jews who were good? Yeah. Ruth was one. Cornelius, if you're looking at New Testament times, would have been another. The last judge that we read about, of course, would have been Samuel. And Samuel was someone who was the last judge in Israel. He was important for a number of reasons, one of which was he helped install an earthly king. God's people reached the point where they said, we want a king over us. We want to be like the other nations. They have kings, and we want to have a king as well. The people came to Samuel, and in 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 5, they said, you're old. You're old! Can't do the job very well anymore. And they said, we've looked at your family, we've seen your sons, and your sons are not like you are. So we want a king. We want a king just like everybody else. Does the desire to be like everybody else still exist? It does. It's not a new problem. America is literally overrun with the desire to be like everybody else. If someone has seen something, done something, bought something, oftentimes the person says, well, you've seen what I've not seen. I want to see it. You've done what I haven't done. I want to do it. You've had this experience, and I want to have it as well. Israel pretty much demanded a king, and that's what they got. As you look at that next section, which is really the final section of the Old Testament, the kings and the prophets, you begin to find that the kings that the people had were not flawless men. Saul comes along, first king of Israel. Israel was united for 40 years. He shows some outright disobedience to God and loses the kingdom. He's a man who in some respects is proud. He struggles with jealousy over David. He consults a witch before his death. And then you have David. We know the story about him and Bathsheba. We know the story about Solomon, how he had a number of women in his life and how that went. The kingdom splits. Israel then has kings in the north and kings in the south for a number of years. As you look at the northern kingdom of Israel, it was the first because of sin, because it was a terrible place to live, spiritually speaking. It was the first to go into captivity. God's prophets tried to help the people in the north to do what was right. Straighten out, live in the right way, or punishment's coming. And they didn't want to listen. Like today, there were some people who heard and heard and heard, and they simply didn't want to respond. The northern kingdom had 19 different kings, and do you know that out of the 19 kings, zero were righteous. Southern kingdom had 20 kings, only 8 of them were righteous. That's basically the Old Testament in a nutshell. If you can keep the information that we looked at, that we highlighted tonight, and that we've gone through, you've got the broad understanding of the Old Testament. With that broad understanding, you're then ready to move into the New Testament, which we hope to do, Lord willing, next week. But I wanted to go through this, building on what we looked at last week, to help you hopefully understand that the Bible is one big story. It's all connected. And it's just a series of building blocks. The Old Testament is foundational. It starts there with some people, very small number. Eventually you get a nation. Nation is in a land. And once they're in the land, they get kings, and the people are not going very well, and there are prophets. And then finally God says, next stage, New Testament. We're halfway through the house that he built. Tonight, we hope that you're in that house that he built through Christ. Jesus said he was going to establish his church. He did. Prophecy talked about it. Jesus was willing to die for it. Are we a member of it? That's the question that we're asking as we stand and sing.